All right, welcome back, everyone. Today we are doing a deep dive into U.S. politics and
With
economics.
fun.
Yeah, kind of like ripping off the Band-Aid on today's news. We've got two main sources. We'll be looking at a daily news analysis and a political economic briefing. It's a lot to cover, but that's why you're here with us, right?
Right.
This is like your cheat sheet, so you can sound super informed at your next, dinner party or
I would
whatever.
say.
We'll be talking about Trump's tariff troubles, the Supreme Court, basically dodging a major showdown, and whether your Social Security checks could be delayed.
A lot going on.
Yeah, buckle up.
Yeah, it is a fascinating mix of stuff happening here in the US and all the international stuff going on too. All kind of like converging at a very important moment.
Right. Okay, let's start with these tariffs. So Trump backed down, at least for now, on those car tariffs. But I'm guessing the auto industry is still pretty nervous.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's
Yeah.
not as simple as it sounds, like the global nature of how we make cars now, all parts are constantly going back and forth across borders. Like
Yeah.
if they had to pay a tariff every time a part crossed a border, it would just be complete chaos.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It'd be like trying to bake a cake where each ingredient gets taxed every time you move it between the counter and the oven.
Oh, wow. So this trade war is less about winning and more about just like not totally destroying the kitchen.
Pretty much, yeah. But like, even just the threat of tariffs is a
Yeah.
real problem. It just creates so much uncertainty, right?
Huh.
Businesses don't want to invest or hire if they don't know what's coming next. And that obviously affects economic growth.
For sure.
And then there's the effect it has directly on, people like you and me, the consumers. Remember those retaliatory tariffs on agriculture?
Yeah. Are those the ones that are gonna make my winter guacamole habit like a luxury?
Yeah, that's the one. Mexico's where we get a lot of our winter produce from, so those tariffs mean your grocery bill is going to be higher. And also, hitting farmers, especially in certain states, that's a pretty strategic move by other countries.
Yeah.
It puts pressure on Trump's base. It's all connected.
Wow. It really is like a chess game, isn't it? And
Yep.
avocados are just pawns.
Exactly.
Okay, well, speaking of political maneuvering, the Supreme Court also had a showdown with Trump, this time over foreign aid.
Yeah. That was a tense situation for sure. Trump refused to spend money that Congress had already approved. And the Supreme Court basically said, nope, not going to fly. They ruled 5-4, so it was really close, but basically avoided a constitutional crisis, I guess.
Huh.
But they did weaken an important law in the process.
Interesting.
And they kind of left the door open for more challenges from the executive branch down the line.
So round one goes to the Supreme Court, but it's not over. Like, what are the chances Trump just ignores them the next time this comes up?
Yeah, that's definitely possible. This ruling sets a precedent that could have, really long-term consequences for the balance of power between the different branches of government.
From avocados to courtrooms, things are definitely heating up everywhere. But let's shift gears for a sec and talk about what's happening overseas. What's the deal with the U.S. cutting off intelligence sharing with Ukraine?
Well, that's a big policy shift. It could have very serious implications for the war effort over there. The Biden administration was all about sharing intelligence in real time. But with Trump, that's changed. It seems like it's part of this broader goal he has to kind of disengage from global conflicts.
So while Europe is trying to, deal with the refugee crisis and support Ukraine, we're backing away. What does that even mean for our alliances around the world, especially with NATO?
It's complicated. Trump has never been shy about criticizing NATO. And this move could definitely strain relationships with our European allies even more.
Is this part of that whole like spheres of influence idea that he talks about? Like dividing up the world into zones controlled by different superpowers? I'm still not sure what he even means by that.
It's a kind of a simplistic way to think about global power dynamics. He seems to think that the US should dominate the Western Hemisphere, Russia gets Europe, China gets Asia,
I guess I can see that.
But in reality, it's way more complex than that. There are overlapping interests and alliances that don't fit so neatly into those boxes.
Yeah, it sounds like he's playing a pretty risky game, and not everyone's on board. Speaking of risky moves, what about the GOP avoiding those town hall meetings? Are they actually just trying to like dodge their constituents?
It's a tactic for sure, but it might backfire. Avoiding direct engagement with voters can easily make them look like they're out of touch or even afraid to answer tough questions.
Right. Okay, so maybe not the best look, but the Democrats aren't exactly playing it safe either. They're talking about letting the government shut down just to get what they want during negotiations. Isn't that a huge gamble?
It's definitely a high-stakes move. The Democrats are betting that if essential services get disrupted, public opinion will swing against the Republicans. But it's risky. Voters might just blame the Democrats for the whole mess.
It's almost like they're both in a game of chicken, just waiting to see who blinks first. And they're both trying to figure out how voters feel about all the stuff going on with Elon Musk and his government shakeup.
Absolutely. Musk has a huge influence on government policies now, and both parties are trying to figure out how to deal with that.
Okay, so we've got tariffs, Supreme Court drama, Ukraine hanging in the balance, and both parties trying to outmaneuver each other. Anything else we should be worried about?
Well, there's Social Security. That could be a real problem.
Oh, no. Please don't tell me my retirement plans are about to go up in smoke.
Not quite, but there are some serious red flags. All the staffing cuts and the leadership chaos at the Social Security Administration is definitely concerning.
Social Security has always been, you know, like the third rail of American politics. Touch it and you die.
Yeah.
Are we really at a point where that's changing?
Hard to say for sure. But the warning signs are there. If that system starts to break down, it could be catastrophic for millions of Americans who depend on those benefits.
And you know that would be a political earthquake.
No doubt. Politicians know how important the senior vote is. They'll do anything to avoid a Social Security meltdown.
Right.
But the big question is, can they actually fix the problems before it's too late?
That's a great question. And a perfect place to, pause for a minute. We'll be right back.
Yeah. Before the break, we were talking about those potential Social Security delays. It's a program that, you know, affects so many people.
It really does. And it's always seemed so, I don't know, untouchable politically. Like no one would even think about messing with it. But is that changing?
It's a really interesting question. I mean, Social Security has been such a fundamental part of America for like decades. Mm. But the reality is it's facing some serious challenges.
Like what kind of challenges?
Well, the demographics are changing.
Right.
People are living longer. So they're collecting benefits for longer. But at the same time, fewer babies are being born. So you have fewer workers actually paying into the system.
So more people taking money out, but fewer putting money in. Doesn't sound very sustainable.
Yeah, that's the problem. And that's not even considering things like, you know, wages not really growing and healthcare costs going up. It's harder for people to even save for retirement in the first place.
So it's like a perfect storm.
Yeah, pretty much. And the political fallout from that could be huge. If Social Security starts to fail, people will just lose faith in the government.
Okay, deep breaths, deep breaths. What can even be done about this?
That is the million-dollar question. There's no shortage of ideas out there. Some people say we should raise the retirement age or increase payroll taxes or even just change how benefits are calculated. But every option has its own problems, and they're all politically controversial, of course.
So no easy answers.
Nope. This is one of those issues that needs a lot of thought and, frankly, some tough choices.
This kind of leads into another political hot potato, the Department of Education. I know our listener is really interested in education reform, so what's your take on everything happening there?
Oh, yeah. It's been a hot topic for sure. A lot of controversy surrounding the new Secretary of Education's guiding principles.
For anyone who hasn't been following this closely, can you kind of break down what those principles are?
Sure. There are three main priorities. One, parents should be the primary decision makers when it comes to their kids' education. Two, keep what she calls diversity programming out of public schools. And three, higher education should mostly focus on career training.
Okay, so let's take those one at a time. What does it really mean to put parents in charge of educational choices?
On the surface, it sounds great, but there are some real concerns, like not all parents have the same resources or access to information. And that could just make the inequalities in our education system even worse.
So it's like saying, yeah, everyone can choose where they want to live, but ignoring the fact that some people can only afford to live in places with terrible schools.
Exactly. It basically means the quality of your education is determined by, like, your zip code and how much money your parents make.
Got it. Okay, and what about this whole idea of keeping diversity programming out of schools? What does that even mean? And what could happen because of it?
It's a bit vague, honestly, and that's part of the problem. Some people think it's basically a ban on critical race theory, which, as we've talked about before, isn't even taught in most K through 12 schools. Others worry that it'll lead to, kind of a whitewashing of history, like avoiding conversations about race, gender, all the important social issues.
So it's not so much about what it actually means, but more about all the fear and uncertainty it creates.
Yeah, exactly. And that uncertainty makes teachers nervous, you know? They don't want to get in trouble, so they're less likely to talk about these important topics in class.
Which brings us to the third point, the focus on higher education mainly being for career training. So are we moving away from this idea of a liberal arts education?
It seems like it. There's a lot of emphasis on, you know, learning specific skills and stuff that you can directly use in a job. And while that's obviously important, some people think we're missing the bigger picture. Like, what about critical thinking, problem solving, just developing a broader understanding of how the world works?
Right. It's like saying the only point of reading is to learn how to write a memo. That misses the whole point of, like, broadening your horizons and becoming a more informed citizen.
Exactly. It's not just about getting a job. It's about developing a love of learning.
Yeah.
And being able to deal with complicated ideas.
Sounds like we're at a crossroads in education. Very different ideas about what the future should look like.
We are. And the decisions we make now are going to have a huge impact on generations to come.
Speaking of potential turning points, you mentioned earlier that some people are talking about Canada possibly becoming the 51st state. Is that a real possibility or more just, you know, a thought experiment?
It's definitely more of a thought experiment at this point, but it does raise some interesting questions about the U.S. and Canada, you know, how we relate to each other.
Like what kind of questions?
Well, for one, it shows how closely our economies are tied together. We're each other's biggest trading partners, so what happens in one country definitely affects the other.
So any talk about splitting up or joining together is just, like, hypothetical.
Pretty much. Both countries benefit a lot from how things are now.
Right. That makes sense. But it is kind of fun to think about what would happen politically if Canada suddenly became part of the U.S.
Oh, yeah. That would definitely shake things up. Canada has a bigger population than California, so they'd have a lot of power in elections. And knowing how Canadians tend to vote, it would probably help the Democrats.
I can see why some Republicans might be a little worried about that.
For sure. It just goes to show that political power is always shifting, and demographics play a huge role in who wins elections.
Speaking of demographics and shifts in power, there's been talk of Georgia possibly electing its first Black female governor. What's happening with that race?
It's a fascinating situation. Lucy McBath, who's already in the House of Representatives, has filed to run for governor. If she wins, it would be a historic moment. Not just for Georgia, but for the whole country.
That would be a huge step forward for representation in politics.
It absolutely would. And it could affect other races, too, like Senator John Ossoff trying to get reelected. Having a strong Black candidate at the top of the ticket could really motivate Black voters and get more people to vote, which could be really important for Ossoff's chances.
Sounds like this race could really change things.
It could. It's a good reminder that elections matter and who we elect to represent us matters a lot.
And speaking of representation, are there any other potential candidates in the Georgia governor's race we should be keeping an eye on? We were just talking about that Georgia governor's race and Lucy McBath possibly becoming the first Black female governor in the U.S. That would be amazing.
Definitely a race to watch. And there's another big name who might jump in. Stacey Abrams.
Oh, yeah. Didn't she almost win the governor's race a few years back? So if she runs, wouldn't that be like a huge primary battle? Two really strong Black women going head to head.
It would be a historic primary for sure. Both McBath and Abrams are, you know, major political figures. They both have their own strengths and their own supporters.
It's really incredible to see this happening in a state like Georgia. It feels like things are really changing.
Yeah, it does. It shows the growing power of Black women in politics, especially in the South. They're getting organized, making their voices heard, you know, demanding change.
It's really inspiring to see. And it reminds us that change might not happen overnight, but it does happen. Okay, well, we've covered a lot today. Trade wars, Supreme Court drama, those potential Social Security problems, the future of education. It's a lot to think about.
It is. And honestly, we've only just scratched the surface of these issues. They're all really complex.
So what's the main takeaway for our listener? What should they be paying attention to as things develop?
I think the biggest thing to remember is that we're living in a time of, like, constant change and uncertainty. The old ways of doing things don't really apply anymore. The political landscape is constantly shifting. So it's more important than ever to, you know, stay informed, think critically about what you're hearing, and just be ready for anything.
That's great advice, and I think it's the perfect note to end on. Thanks for joining me on this deep dive.
My pleasure.
And to our listener, thanks for tuning in. We'll be back soon with another deep dive into the issues that matter most. Until then, stay curious, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay informed.